It's Wednesday, the 22nd of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Omri Caspi and Danny Green. Fantrax and RJB888. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like RJB888 and help not only support the podcast but be a sponsor of a show, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. Thank you, RJB888. We are getting very close to getting to everyone who's left a review for this season. I think there's about five or six left. So if you haven't left a review on the podcast, it takes a couple of minutes and it really does help the podcast grow. It helps me bring more content, better content, and it takes a couple of minutes of your time. And you can give an honest appraisal on there as well. I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but I'll do it now. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you are watching this show live on YouTube, which you can do with any of the shows, and you want to interact with me, you can do that by tweeting at me at redrock_bball. I mentioned this, that the show is brought to you by Fantrax, and if you don't know what Fantrax is, sit down, take some notes, because you need to get acquainted with what Fantrax is. Fantrax is the best, not one of the best, it is the best place to host your fantasy league. Forget about the old sites where you might have used to have hosted it, because they pale into insignificance when you compare it to Fantrax. They have the best free casual league options out there, the most robust customization you can find, plus their premium league model leaves everybody else in the dust. You can do it not only for basketball, but for eight other major sports: college football, college basketball, football, baseball, hockey, soccer, NASCAR, golf. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but there is a stack of stuff over on Fantrax, and they're always looking to add to their arsenal of sports. And when you go and sign up for Fantrax, use the promo code REDROCK, and that promo code, what that allows you to do, it allows you to go into the running to win $100 worth of Fantrax credits, which you can use to upgrade your league to a premium league. And one of the things you can do in a premium league, which is fantastic, is have salaries and have contracts for your players. It is absolutely sensational to do that. The other thing you can do in Fantrax, you can have more than a 20-team league, which is the limit on ESPN. You can have a 30-team league. You can have a 60-team league if you wanted to. And you might ask, how does a 60-team league work? How do I play that? Well, you can divide it into divisions. And you can also set it up that instead of just playing one opponent per week, you can play four opponents per week. Same lineup, but you're playing four different people. It is the most in-depth. And I know that you guys love fantasy sports because you listen to this podcast. And you are listening to a fantasy sports podcast. You haven't dialed a sex line by the sound of my voice. And if you have dialed a sex line and you expected someone with this sort of voice to pick up, I do worry a little bit that you'd want to hear me on a sex line. I'm sure that's not appealing to anybody. But this isn't a sex line. This is the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Show. And my voice is in the bin at the moment. It is an absolute disaster. So there might be a stage during the show where I need to grab the drink bottle and grab a drink, or might have a bit of a coughing and spluttering fit as I try to get my my voice back as I start bleeding from the throat due to this gravelly sound that's coming out at the moment. Maybe it sounds all right at your end. It sounds bloody annoying to me from this end. I feel like I'm all over the place here, because this is the last Red Rock Basketball Monster Show, the last for the 2015-16 season. The last. The 2016-17 season starts in 2 days' time with the NBA draft, and that's when the podcast will be back. But this is the last of this season. It is the Golden State Warriors season in review. So, Michael Bolton, let's do it one more time.
Let's get to it.
Oh, the Warriors. Should I talk about the Warriors? Now, let's give one sec. This is, the last of this season, but don't go anywhere, because you need to keep subscribed to this podcast. You need to keep listening, because we are going to do a draft review show after the draft, and then we'll be doing some interesting stuff in the lead up to free agency. What are we doing is doing a 2015 draft review as well, seeing how the rookies did. And also we'll look at the players who were drafted in 2013, meaning they're heading into their fourth season coming up. And that's where a lot of people really take a step forward. So we'll be covering those guys. We'll be talking about players who finish the season outside the top 100, who might take a jump into the top one or into the top 50, taking a real big jump forward. Guys like a CJ McCollum, like a Jimmy Butler from the year before, guys like even like a Will Barton and a Kent Bazemore, just analyzing some players there and try and figure that out. And then when we get to free agency reviews, some Summer League podcasts, strategy podcasts. There's heaps of stuff. There's plenty more Red Rock leagues to sign up for as well. There's all the standard redraft leagues we're going to be doing head-to-head in Roto. We've got more dynasties under our belt. There's heaps of stuff coming. So don't forget to stay tuned to this podcast and make sure you stay tuned or you start tuning into the Red Rock Football Podcast, which will begin broadcasting very shortly. And I'm sure you'll check out all the great stuff that Russell Clay and Jordan Schiltz are doing over there. That is enough promo bullshit from me now. Let's head into the Golden State Warriors. They were the greatest regular season team we have ever seen. They were 73-9. They had one of the greatest comebacks in the conference finals of the playoffs, beating the Thunder after being down 3-1. They lost the NBA Finals to one of the greatest individual and team performances ever from LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. And one thing I'll put out there now, I'll probably put a couple of things out there now. The biggest one I'll put out there, they are not chokers. Steph is not a choker. They are not chokers. Choking is a load of shit. It is a joke. These guys are not chokers. This is just what people do. People play badly. People play well. The Warriors played well for majority of the season. They had a couple of lapses. LeBron James was on a level that, let's be honest, we probably have never seen before with some of the stuff that he was doing. And you know, the Warriors couldn't match it. They did everything they could, but choking is a load of shit. Steph is still the MVP, and he was still the MVP, and he deserved the MVP. LeBron was clearly better than him in the finals, clearly, but that doesn't mean that Steph was a fraud. It doesn't mean that this team is a fraud because they're a jump-shooting team. They don't play defense or any of that bullshit. It is lazy. It is not true. They don't choke. Let's forget all that bullshit. Let's celebrate the positives. Let's celebrate how good and how amazing it was for Cleveland, how amazing it was for the Cavaliers, how amazing James and Dellavedova and Irving and Thompson and Love, how amazing it was, rather than let's throw a, Harry Barnes, cost them. Steph Curry, choked. How's your missus now, Steph? Let's be more positive. Let's get more positive vibes out into the world. We don't need all this negative hatred stuff because it's fine to accept. And look, I criticize things a lot on this podcast. You've heard me criticize coaching a lot. That's because of decisions that are made where I know that I could have made a better decision and things that have been thought out and thought out incorrectly. I will never hang shit on a player for, he didn't hit his shots. I would say, well, maybe he's not that good or maybe he had an off day. But I'm never like, you're trash, you're garbage, cool. Because you could kick my, you beat me 100 before I even scored a point. I'm pretty sure of that. And I'm not the best basketball player in the world, I'm not the worst. I'm definitely not small, and these guys would it would kick my ass from here to from wherever you can Temecula. Let's go with that. So that's, I wanted to get that out of the way. Now the Warriors season was sublime. Watching the Warriors every single game of the regular season was must see appointment TV. You didn't know what was going to happen, and even if you had have known what was going to happen in advance, you would have just said bullshit. That's not happening. There is no way that is happening. And that's what you would have said for probably a dozen Warriors games. Warriors Thunder in January. Bullshit. You would have said, maybe you wouldn't have said it so calmly. Maybe should I go full Aussie here? That's bullshit, mate. Maybe you would have said something like that. There's no way. That's enough of me exaggerating my Aussiness. That's what you would have said if someone had told you the things that the Warriors would have done. If someone had told you the things that Steph was doing, you would have said, get your hand off it, stop playing 2K, and let's go watch some real basketball. Because that's what it was like watching these guys. It was just scream at the TV, drop F-bombs, and just be like, there is no effing way that just happened. And that was a full season of it. It was one of the best NBA seasons for just what the absolute... I want to avoid saying the F word. I don't know why I want to avoid it because I drop it every 5 seconds in real life. But for some reason, I just want to keep this podcast F free. Hey, maybe one day you'll get an F out of me. We'll see. Anyway, I am rambling. Maybe it's my voice that's making me ramble. Let's talk about the Warriors. Let's talk about their season. And we start by doing that by looking at their free agent situation. They've got 4 unrestricted free agents. Andy Varejao, Brandon Rush, Leandro Barbosa, and Mo Spates. Not a murderer's row, but players, especially Barbosa and Spates, and Rush to a degree, who played pretty significant roles off the bench. Varejao played a role. It was a role that he shouldn't have played, but he still played that role. Now, whether these guys will be back depends on what the Warriors are planning on doing in the offseason. We've heard the Kevin Durant talk all season. The Dirk Nowitzki rumor came out of nowhere, which I think there's about a negative 2% chance of that ever going down. But hey, who knows at this point? The restricted free agency is the real intriguing thing for the Warriors. They've got four restricted guys. Jim McAdoo. They've got Ian Clark, Festus Ezeli, and Harry Barnes. McAdoo, I think McAdoo's worth persisting with. I think he's got a little bit of talent, so he's an interesting guy. Ian Clark, take him or leave him. Festus Ezeli, I want to know what happened to this guy, seriously, because there were very well-respected basketball people, like Nate Duncan, who earlier in the season, Festus is the better option. He should be starting over Bogut. He is the better center. End of the season comes, it's like he forgot how to play basketball. Now, he was never a good offensive player, but he was always a good defensive player. It is literally like he forgot how to play, and he was unplayable. He was trash. He was garbage, and I don't know what's going on. Whether you feel at the moment that the push for them to re-sign him or match any offer, it won't be there. Harry Barnes, on the other hand, he was also garbage. He is getting matched unless Kevin Durant comes across, which they still might be able to pull off, but Barnes is getting a big contract. He's getting $20 million plus. Maybe it's not the max, but it's still a lot of money. And that's, you're going to hear numerous takes, very, very hot takes about how these guys aren't worth the money. Well, you know what makes them worth the money? If someone's willing to pay it. And someone will be willing to pay Harry Barnes the money, because that is the environment that we're working in. When you've got to get to like $89 million, I think it is, to get to the cap floor, you have to spend money, and it might look pretty stupid when he's getting $27 million a year in 4 years' time, but that's just the current environment. You have to pay, you know, players, and Barnes is going to get it, whether it's on this team or it's on another team. I think there's still a 90% chance that he remains in Golden State, but there were some interesting comments today. I think it was from Andrew Berger, maybe I'm misremembering, saying that there's just so many players on this team that they're going to have to get money, and they're going to have to get their share of accolades, that maybe some of them they're not going to be able to stick together. And maybe that's Bogut and Barnes do have a relatively close friendship. I think Bogut's the one who gave Barnes the Black Falcon nickname. I could be wrong on that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think that's the way. That is a top 10 nickname in the NBA. We are sorely lacking in nicknames, or nicknames that I haven't created anyway, in the NBA for players. Barnes is going to get paid, and we'll see where it is, and you can have your outrage, you can do what you want, but it doesn't matter. Other contract news, Sean Livingston is non-guaranteed at $5.7 million. They will fully guarantee that. There is zero doubt about that. They're not going to be able to attract a backup point guard for better value than that, and better than what Livingston gives to this team, so I don't think there's any concern with that. Now, again, I've rambled on for a long time to start this podcast. Let's actually get into the players now, and let's start breaking them down. And we start, of course, with the MVP, with Steph Curry. I won't say I'm the only person, but I'd be pretty bloody close to the only person who had Steph as my number one player heading into the season. I was adamant that I was picking him number one in 8 cat leagues. Without any shadow of a doubt, I was picking him at one. I'd pick him in number one in 9 cat as well. And if I had somehow managed to get a number one pick, which I've gotten once in the 10, 15 leagues that I play every season over the last 10 years, I've had a number one pick once. And that was when I picked Kevin Durant, and that was about 3 weeks before he broke his foot. So that worked out, sensationally well for me getting that number one pick. But if I had the number one pick, I would have picked Steph. And again, maybe there was a couple of others out there, but we were in the vast minority that had Steph as number one. Clear to say, it doesn't need to be said, he was the number one player. He was the number one player in 9-cat, in 8-cat, in pre-All-Star, in post-All-Star, in punting formats, everything. He was the number one player completely across the board. He had a baffling, we talked about on-offs for all these teams. If you look at a couple of these on-offs for the Warriors, they're out of control. 22.2 on-off for Steph Curry. Yeah, that's extraordinary. Win shares of 17.9. A win share per 48, the highest in the, actually I think second behind Boba Marjanovic at 0.318. Offensive box score plus minus at 12.4. Now defensively, he wasn't a negative. He was 0.1, and that's about right. Again, better defender than Lillard, better defender than guys like McCollum. Yeah, held his own. A huge box score plus minus of 12.5, a huge VORP of 9.8, a massive PER of 31.5, a true shooting, a literally batshit insane true shooting of 67% when he takes 55% of his three-pointers, of his shots are three-pointers. It is just a crazy, crazy number. A 33% assist percentage, 13% turnover percentage, usage at 33%. You don't get guys with a usage of 33 and a true shooting of 67. It just doesn't happen. This season was historic for many ways. We saw Steph average 29 points a game, up 5 points a game on last year. He averaged 5 triples a game. He literally single-handedly basically won you that category. He increased his threes from 1.4 a game, or by 1.4 a game. He had 5.5 rebounds, another increase on last season. He had 6.4 assists, which was a dip, but he had 2 steals, I think led the league in steals, 0.2 blocks. He shot 49% from the field, an increase there as well. He shot 91 from the free throw line, just a marginal dip, and then 45% from three. These numbers, he shot 45% from three on 11 attempts per game. You don't need me to go on too much more about Steph Curry, but there'll be some questions about him in the Fan Essentials question segment about Steph Curry. He is tremendous. He will come out. We know he is an arrogant bastard. He is a determined prick. He will come out fired up, and he will attempt to average more than 5 threes a game next season, whether it happens or not, but he will come out like he's had a red-hot poker jammed fair up his asshole, and he will be absolutely burning with rage to get this team back and to, again, just show everyone, I am the man. LeBron, yep, fine, but I am the man. And I get the feeling we're going to see some teams get absolutely pulverized by the Warriors next season. But hey, they're not unbeatable. And that's the thing. And that's, I think the fact that the Cavs won in the finals will change free agency and the draft a lot, because a lot of teams will be like, well, what are we doing? How can we beat this Warriors team? Let's plan for 3 years in advance when maybe Steph starts to lose a step. Let's not take a big swing here. But now they're going, well, you know, if we make the right moves, we can beat them. They're not unbeatable. They can falter. They can drop off. We can beat them. Teams like the Clippers, teams like the Thunder, players like Kevin Durant, we can beat them. And they should have known they could beat them, but they'd be thinking, we're up 3-1. Like, what else do we have to do to beat them? Maybe they were thinking it's impossible. And the Cavs come out and do it. They'd be like, oh, cool, that's it. We're in. Yep, boys, Russ, Serge, we're in. We can do this next year. And organizationally, there might be more of that thought process as well. I guess we'll wait and see. Draymond Green talked about Steph Curry's on-off. Draymond was better, 25.6. That is huge. Now, last season, Draymond was a real bolter, come from being a free agent pickup to being a player who ended the season as the 20th ranked player in NICAT leagues and 29th in ACAT. And I looked at him and went, how can he get better? And that's a question where players take a big leap forward and you look at him and you go, how can they get better? I said the same thing about Jimmy Butler, and he couldn't really get better. He did regress. I looked at Draymond and went, how did he get better? Well, he did, and he did get better. He finished the season as the 13th ranked player in both 8 and 9 cat leagues. That's pretty impressive. He took everything, and he became a guy that, literally at times, you debate who was the more valuable player, Steph or Draymond, for this team. Draymond averaged, he played an extra 4 minutes a game, so it's sort of understandable that he saw an increase, but he got his scoring up to 14.3, up from 11.7. He hit 1.3 triples. He gave you 9.5 rebounds, 7 assists, which is almost double his total from the year before. That is crazy. 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, so he's a triple one player. Shot 48 from the field. He went 71 from the line, both increases from last year, and 38 from three, up from 34 the year before. So huge increases right across the board from Draymond. He was absolutely sensational for this team all season. And you feel that, okay, and I now have to look at it, 14.5, 9.5, 7, with almost, not even a triple one, almost a triple 1.5, 1.3, 1.5, 1.5, threes, steals, and blocks. A triple 1.5 is not an easy thing to do. Well, I don't think, I have to go back, I should check that. If someone's got some time and they want to check that now, how many people have averaged a triple 1.5? That'd be interesting to find out. How does he get better? Does he go 16, 10, and 8? Is that possible? It's not crazy. And then where does he become? A top 10 player? I reckon that might be a stretch. And I think taking him at the end of the first round is going to be the absolute sweet spot to get him. You're not going to be able to get him at the back end of the second round. No chance whatsoever. But there was a stage where he did have a bit of a slump in that February section of the season, February, March. He did drop off somewhat, but still, he was still mighty impressive. For the last 2 months of the season, or the last 3 months of the season, which is including playoffs, he was the seventh-ranked player. Again, some of that does include the playoffs, so it's not completely accurate, but he averaged in those 36 games 1.6 threes, 1.7 steals, 1.8 blocks. So that is a triple 1.5. And, you know, for someone who was a bit of a negative in free throws, he took that up to 71. So that's still a negative, but it's not as much of a negative. Got his field goal percentage to be a positive as well. Just a really, you know, sensational season from Draymond. We look at his advanced numbers. He was clearly the second highest in win shares on this team. His defensive box score plus minus was second on the team behind Andrew Bogut. His overall box score plus minus was second. His VORP was second. His PER was second at 19. He had a true shooting of 59. He was second on the team in assist percentage. He's just, and that's the thing. You want to play like the Warriors. Good luck finding someone who's another Steph Curry, and almost equally, or maybe even more, good luck finding someone who's Draymond Green, because it doesn't happen. A rim protector who hits threes and averages 7 assists a game. Like, it literally doesn't exist, and I'm not sure it's really ever existed in the, again, that's, I should write these down. I'm going to write some notes while I'm doing this. Triple 1.5s and players who have averaged 7 assists, 1.5 blocks, and 1.5 triples. I'll get back to you guys. Maybe I'll tweet that out at @redrock_beeble. I need to look those up. But if you're quicker to it and you're watching this live, is there anyone watching this live at the moment? No, there's a couple of people. The timing is never great for all of you fans in the States. Let me know if you find the answer to that. Draymond, superb. Let's get on to Clay. He was superb as well, but he was a player. Like, there was quite a few of these players. And again, it's really something to remember as we head into next season. Plenty of players start the season slow. John Wall, Chris Paul, yeah, prime examples. Klay Thompson, why did I take him in the second round? That was a common lament of many people. Wasted it. He's just a three-point specialist. I could get that later on. Yeah, maybe you could. But he was also red hot. He was the 10th ranked player post All-Star break, Clay. He was 20th in 8-cat. He finished the season 19th and 25th in 8 and 9-cat respectively. Yeah, pretty impressive stuff from Clay. It was a little bit of a drop off from last season. Last season he was the 9th ranked player. This year he was the 19th. He had an on-off of 12.7, so comfortably the third highest player on this team in that metric. If we look at what he did overall in the season, if he didn't play with Steph Curry, you'd be lauding everything he did. 22, you still do, but 22.6 points a game, 3.6 triples. He averaged the same amount of three-pointers per game this year than what Steph did last year. 3.8 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.8 steals, 0.6 blocks, 46, 87, and 43%. So obviously, if you're playing in a three-point percentage league, Clay and Steph are massive. And I am considering doing some three-point percentage leagues for the Red Rock Listener Leagues. Instead of having turnovers, splitting the field goal percentage component into a two-point percentage and a three-point percentage. I'm going to do a bit more research, but I think that might be a way to go, given my well-known distaste of the turnover category. Clay was obviously superb. He improved in points. He improved in threes. He got more rebounds. His steal numbers dropped. His block numbers dropped. And his assist numbers dropped. But his efficiency numbers were right up there. Even though, and this is crazy, he shot 43% from three. And it was a bit of a drop from what he did last season. Again, this is sort of giving a forward notice to a question later on. Is Steph a guy that I would take at the start of the second round? No, I don't think I would. Those threes are really impressive. They don't win you the category like Steph does, but they're still pretty good. The points are good, but everything else is sort of just a middling sort of number. The three-point percentage obviously is key if you've got that category, but everything else is okay. He, to me, is a player that I don't think I've... No, that's not true. I did own him once in a fantasy league in his rookie year after Monte Ellis got traded. I snatched him up and he took me to a championship in that league, but I don't think I've ever drafted him after that. And I reckon he's a player who's going to be looking to go inside the top 15, and I'm not sure that I'm willing to go that high with him. But again, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge. We look at advanced stats for this team. Clay was obviously third on win shares. You know, nice positive numbers. Win shares per 48. He was a little bit down, actually ninth, because there were some players on this team that didn't play many minutes are right up there. Box score plus minus. That metric didn't love him. He was actually just a negative point. Sorry, he was just a 0.7, so just above average. And defensively, a negative 2.2. Now, Clay gets lauded for his defense, But to me, he's a guy who he does guard point guards, but maybe on a bigger player, he's not so good because that's not a great number, defensive box score plus minus. In fact, if I look at the team, it's the second worst defensive box score plus minus on the team, which is it's something that requires further investigation because advanced metrics don't tell you everything and the eye test doesn't tell you everything. But when you've got the general consensus and what you're seeing of Clay make you go, yep, one of the best defensive shooting guard, one of the best two-way guys, and then you see such a horrible defensive metric in the defensive box score plus minus, you have to look at it and go, okay, what's actually happening? What's real? Is he as good as what he is? And it doesn't impact much for fantasy, but he doesn't get steals. His block numbers, which were great the year before at 0.8, which is great for a shooting guard, 0.6 as a drop-off. You know, he dropped by 0.3 in steals as well. And you know, those things do cause him to go from that ninth player to that 19th player. And just, you know, it'd be good to investigate just to see exactly what happened to his defense. Why was his defense's numbers so low? Now, still an awesome true shooting of 60%, a PER of 18.6, but he's just not a guy that is doing much else. He's not creating. He's not grabbing rebounds. The defensive stats on there, there's points. There's a shitload of threes. There's really good percentages without being really game-changing influences because he takes so few free throws. He only averaged 3 attempts per game. So he wasn't a massive positive there. A 46% shooter from the field, great as a shooting guard, but overall it's just a marginal negative. I think he's a negative 0.1 in a standard score, so that's as close to break even as you can get. But yeah, I think if you're picking Clay at that 12-13 turn mark, I'm not really sure it's going to work out for you. Now, he could improve again next season, but I'm not all that confident in that being the case. Andy Bogut, he was a player that last season in the finals didn't play the last couple of games, and yeah, he's very quick to be written off by people. But for fantasy, his numbers, they look really like, they look superb. He was a 4.6 in on off, which was fourth best on the team. He was the 82nd ranked player in 9 cat leagues. He was the 107th in 8 cat leagues, and we look at his per 36 numbers, 52nd, because he doesn't play much, but he still does tremendous amount of work. He played under 20 minutes a game, 19.7 to be exact, and he averaged 5 points. And you compare, put those two things together and go, this is a top 90 player. Yeah, my old Aussie mate's going to come out and go, that's bullshit, mate. Like, that's not where his value comes. He gives you 6.7 rebounds, solid. 2 assists for a center, sensational. Half a steal, 1.6 blocks, and 63% from the field. Yes, he was a 45% free throw shooter. But you know what doesn't matter? He took 0.73 free throws a game. So yes, 45 is atrocious, but he's not taking 7 attempts like Andre Drummond or DeAndre Jordan. You can easily work around Bogut there. So he's not a punt free throw only guy. It's still, look, it's almost a negative 0.5 in terms of the standard score, but that is easily absorbable. You put him and Steph together and you are a standard score of one, which is not unbeatable, but it's going to get you the victory probably 60% of the time in that category. And you can build that category out with other players and you'd feel pretty good about it. Now, Bogut suffered a knee injury. We know he's injury prone. Is he a player that I would draft in standard leagues next year? I would probably say no. I don't really imagine his minutes going up. We know that Draymond plays at center. Now, whether Azili returns maybe changes a couple of things, but I can't see Bogut ever going and play 30 minutes a night. But what he does is he's a great source of rebounds, field goal percentages, and blocks on a short-term basis. And you'll see again, if he has to play 27 minutes, and it will happen occasionally, that he'll put up huge numbers. He still can do it. He's one of the smartest players in the NBA. He is one of the best defenders in the NBA, without a doubt. His defensive presence, his defensive play calling, his defensive communication, his ability to set screens, his ability to pass, he is a really underrated talent. And it's shown in the way that it bears out advanced numbers wise. He was a 4.5 in box score plus minus, third on the team. Now, closer to Draymond than he was to the player behind him, who was Andre Iguodala. A 5.1 defensive box score plus minus is massive. Big win share numbers, a 16 PER, 62 true shooting, and using such a minuscule usage of just 11%. So he really does a tremendous amount of work for this team. He was third on this team in VORP as well, and just shows and what sort of value he has in such limited minutes. But he's 31. He's coming off a knee injury, which is going to keep him out of the Olympics. Does he get better? Probably not, but he's going to play that similar role, and it's more going to be, he'll be a really useful player in a 14-team league, but he's probably not someone that I'm going to use my last three picks on in a standard league, but very happy to add him off the waiver wire, especially if I'm punting points, which is an underused strategy. Then he becomes, you know, an even better contributor. Andre Iguodala. Really useful for this team, obviously. 3.9 on off, you know, speaks to that. Fantasy wise, he was 137th in 9-cat leagues. He was 140th in 8-cat, but his pre and post All-Star split is a big difference, 93 versus 285. Now, he did suffer that injury during the season, that ankle problem, but that wasn't post All-Star. He dropped off. And in the finals, he had a couple of good games, but then did struggle as well. And his days of being a fantasy guy you want for 12-team leagues, they're over. He's not going to be a draftable player. He's going to more remain a 14 or 16-team league guy. But will he play the 28 minutes a game that he played again this season? You might think, you know, maybe it drops a minute or two. He only averaged 7.5 points. He almost hit a 3. And where his value comes fantasy is 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.1 steals, shooting 48%. That's where his value comes. 36% of his threes as well. And it's those, you know, rebounds, assists, steals that's really valuable. And the 48% from the field is also real nice from Iggy too. But it's hard for me to envisage him getting better at this point in his career. Now, he had a subpar PER of just 12.2, but in terms of box score plus minus and VORP, he was the fifth best in VORP. He was fourth in box score plus minus, posting a really nice positive defensive box score plus minus, still a positive offensive. Win shares were fine. We know who he is, but to see his role expand plus 30 minutes a night and being that guy who's a top 60 fantasy guy, that's done. And I talk about this on the podcast quite a bit, is that you go through Roto Monster and check out any player you want, you'll have a look at their fantasy rankings, and you'll see that so many players, unless they're a real stud, have a couple of seasons where they're pretty highly ranked. Now, Iguodala had, if I go and count these up, 8 seasons where he was ranked inside the top 60. 57, 52, 33, 39, 52, 35, 53, 32. And then 108, 78, 139, 133. The decline has started. The minutes have dropped off. The production has dropped off as well. And, you know, you might forget that sometimes these guys have these seasons, but it's always finite. It always comes to an end. That's something to really consider in dynasty leagues and considering rookies as well. Yeah, you might get 2 seasons of them as a top 100 player, and then it drops off. And a lot of that is situational as well. But there's a lot to be said for what Iguodala brings to this team, but what he brings to your fantasy team, not so important. Harry Barnes, HB, the pencil. The Black Falcon, the pencil. Ooh. I wish I had a book of nicknames. I'm going to create a book of nicknames for players now. The pencil. Harrison Barnes, the pencil. I'm pretty happy with that nickname. Let's get it trending somehow. I don't know how. It's the off season. We're not going to be talking Harry Barnes. When he gets signed, I'm going to make a pencil pun. Iguodala, Bogut, Thompson, Green, Curry. Big plus minus boosts. Harry Barnes, -1.8. And that sort of goes a bit to explaining what he did. He was 119th this season in 9-cat leagues. He was 145th in 8-cat. But like Iguodala, a really significant drop post-All-Star, and he suffered an injury to start the season as well that cost him a fair bit of time. Now, he was a guy that a lot of people were touting as a breakout player. They were using comparisons between himself and Jimmy Butler and what they'd done in their season prior to breakouts. I never saw it coming for Barnes. I really didn't see him being as bad as what he was in the finals, but 145th in 8-cat leagues, he's not a 12-team league guy. In a different team, in a different setting, he's a top 100 player to me. I think that he can become a top 100 player, but he definitely wasn't impressive this season. He played 31 minutes, 11, 5, and 1.6. He had 1.2 triples, 0.6 steals, 45, 76, and 37. Yeah, really good three-point percentage, really nice. Field goal percentage, subpar, free throws, about average. These are not great numbers. Like, what does he do well? He gives you little bits of everything. So I'd much prefer him in a roto league than in a head-to-head sort of situation. But next season, if he averaged 15.5 points, and grabbed 6 rebounds and gave you a steal again with 1.5 threes, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be stunned at all if that happened. But if he sticks with the Warriors, you have to think that that's a bit of a long shot of happening. If you own Harry B, if you own the pencil in a dynasty league, I do suggest buying low because this is the lowest point for him. He was dreadful in those couple of games, could not hit open shots. His confidence looked absolutely shot. If you are buying the pencil, now is the time to do it because you're getting him for probably a player that's ranked about 180th at this point, given the way that he looks and the negative connotation or the negative perception of the pencil out there in the world of basketball and fantasy basketball, when you could very comfortably be finding himself being a top 90 player for the next 2 seasons. That's a possibility. He could be a top 100 player even on the Warriors in the next couple of seasons. That's more of a stretch, but it is a possibility. So this is a real good time to go pencil shopping and seeing if you can get yourself a bit of a steal because, again, when is a player at his lowest? This is when he is at his lowest. In his last 3 games in the finals, he shot 16%. It doesn't get much worse than that. He shot 20% from 3. He shot 50% from the free throw line. He averaged 5 points in those 3 games. It is brutally bad, but he can be a lot better than this. We know he can be a lot better than this. We've seen flashes of him being a lot better. Now, on this team, as a box score plus minus, he was actually a negative. He was a negative defensively, which we sort of understand from him. Offensively, he was a 0.4. He was still an above average win shares guy. He still had a good true shooting of 56, but a PER of 12.3 is not spectacular. But he can, he's not old. He's still, he's only played 4 seasons. We know that he's a restricted free agent. He's 24 years of age. He's still got the next 4 years to really even start to hit his peak. So he can be better than this, and this is really a time that I'd be pretty interested in buying low on Harry. So if you own Harry in a dynasty league and I'm in it, get prepared to be low-balled, which I'm sure if you listen to this, you're going to have your guard right up, and you're not going to be all that interested in accepting any deal from me. And I think that's the problem with doing these podcasts is people that are in my leagues listen to it and they get a fair idea of what I like to do, of the players that I like and the thought processes that I have and the tactics that I use as well. But you don't care about that. You care about my take on Sean Livingston, who's the next player up. He was a negative 6.6 this season, 195th in 9-cat, 206th in 8-cat, and that feels just about right for Livingston. You're not going to get him as a standard league guy. Yeah, he's absolutely worth adding when Steph Curry has to miss time because he'll play 30 minutes. He'll get you above average rebounds. He'll score a little bit. He won't hit threes to save himself at all, but he'll do some nice rebounding, some nice defensive stuff, and worth owning in that situation. He played 20 minutes a game this year and only 6.7 points, but 2.5 rebounds, 3 assists, 0.7 steals, shooting 52 and 86 is tremendous. 15% from 3, you're probably not in love with that, but 52% out of a point guard, 86 from the line, 3 assists, 2.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, perfect for your 16, sort of 18 team league. Yeah, even though he's ranked 200th, I would still consider him in a 16 teamer just because of his ability to shoot at that percentage and the free throw percentage and give you those assists in a rotisserie league. Those sort of numbers are extraordinarily valuable in under 20 minutes a game. And if Steph, touch wood, suffers some sort of injury and Livingston's forced into a bigger role, then he becomes a top 120 player, I think. And I don't think there's a massive debate about that. Like a lot, and surprisingly, this team, the Warriors, only 5 players registered positive box score plus minuses. I suppose because they were so big that a lot of the others suffered a little bit. Livingston was a negative 0.5, still a positive defensively, really nice win share numbers, a PER of 14, a true shooting of 58, and this team's got so many players with huge true shooting numbers. Only one player on this team had a true shooting of under 50, and that was Andy Varejao, who, let's be honest, shouldn't have been playing at all. Festus Azili. I don't know what to make of Azili, because seriously, a lot of smart basketball people were singing his praises. He's going to get a big contract. He should be starting. He's the best center and best center on this team. And now I don't know what to make where his career goes from here. He's going to have a career. He's going to get signed somewhere, but whether it's with this team or not, can we trust his injuries? His knee problem kept him out for such a long time this season. And when he came back, he looked absolutely lost. And we can look at his numbers. 189 pre-All-Star, 380 post, and that was him coming back from that knee injury. Just looked trash. In the playoffs, he was an absolute mess. He played just 14 minutes a game this year. Yeah, that's up from the 11 he played last season. He averaged 6 and 4.5. He gave you 0.8 blocks and 55%. And we translate that to per 36. It's 15 and 12 with 2 blocks and 0.7 steals, 55 and 51. The free throws are a concern. He does take, he took 2.6 free throw attempts per game, which is, you know, Boga took 0.7 in 5 more minutes, you know, 5 minutes extra. So he takes more free throws than what Boga does. But the numbers, yeah, they're relatively impressive. Good blocks, good rebounds, you know, decent scoring, decent finishing at the rim from him. But where does he go now? I would love to see if you can get him on a cheap contract. I would like the Bulls to have a crack at him as a backup. I want the Bulls to get some of these, some of my favorite big men. I want Cole Aldrich in Chicago. I'd like Jan Mahinmi there. But I wouldn't mind Azealia coming across and having a chance to be a player. But can his knees sustain it? Maybe. I think that he could be a player who averages 10-7, maybe 10-8, with 1.5 to 1.7 blocks as a starter. And that, you know, at 56% shooting, you're talking about good rebounding, good blocks, good field goal percentage. Positive three categories means that you're around that 100 mark to me, and you should be looked at in standard leagues. Now, where he goes depends. I really don't see him playing 25 for the Warriors next season. Not only do they have Bogut, but they have Draymond Green, who plays a lot of minutes at center. So I'm not sure that he'd probably get more than the 14 minutes he played this season, but he might not. He probably won't get 25, and that would rule him out of being a 12-team consideration for me. If you look at what Azealia did advanced stats-wise, he was pretty good. His defensive box score plus-minus was fourth on the team. And Jason Thompson was third, who no longer plays for the team. Overall, he was just a negative 0.1. The offense was just a little bit worse, but win shares, he was good at 2.7, a great win shares per 48. He was fifth on the team in that statistic, a PER of almost 18. You know, put up some decent advanced numbers, but the end of the season really cost him. And like Harry Barnes, if you are in a deeper dynasty, this is an opportunity. Now, people will probably be less inclined to go really low on Azealia because, A, he doesn't have as much of a negative reputation as what Barnes does at the moment. And people can say, we've never seen him as a starter. With the pencil, they'll say, look, he's been starting and he's done jack shit for 4 years. With Azealia, they can say, well, if he might go somewhere, the Warriors won't match, he'll become a starter. There's a bit more upside there. I'd still be testing it out because I don't think he tops out as a top 50 player at all, but I think he could potentially have a couple of seasons of being a top 80 player. I think that's probably at his ceiling in the next 4 years. He could have at least a season inside the top 80 if the location works out right for him, but really a puzzling and a confusing end to the season. Leandro Barbosa, the Brazilian blur, not quite as blurish now as what he was in the past, but still, he had his moments, he had his games, but he's 33 years of age now. He's an unrestricted free agent. He was the 284th player this season in 9 and 286th in 8 cat leagues. Nothing really to write home about there. You know, played a couple of decent games. It's all dependent on in guys if like Steph's not there or Clay's not there, or even if the pencil misses as well, he can slot in and get some playing time there. But he's really not going to be of any interest unless you're in a really deep league, and he's not getting better at the current age that he's at. His advanced numbers, they weren't spectacular at all. He was one of the worst on this team in defensive or in total box score plus minus at a negative 2.1. Negative defensively, negative offensively, above below average win shares on a team that won 73 games is not ideal either. A PER of just 11.7, nothing too exciting about Barbosa. If we look at what he averaged for the season, 6.2, half a three, 1.6 rebounds, 1 assist, 0.6 steals, 49-82. So great percentages, but just really, you know, putrid contributions across the board. The half a three and the half a steal are decent, but you know, no rebounding, no assists. He's had his time. We know the age. Whether he returns or not, he's not going to have a role next season. I wouldn't have thought where he approaches 20 minutes. He played less than 15 this year, and you would imagine that number heads its way down next season. Mo Spates wasn't quite the same player that he was in 2014-15, where he just had that crazy run where he just come off the bench and hit every single shot known to man. He was still valuable, but only played 11 minutes a game this season. Played in a lot of them, 96 games in total, but 11 minutes, 6.7 points. He hit half a three, adding that to his game, 3 boards. But defensively, you don't care much. He's a 42% shooter as a center, which is poor. 81 from the line, but did hit 40% of his threes in something that, again, he did start to add to his game this season. It was a real decrease on last season. He played 5 minutes a game less. He shot the ball 7% worse from the field. Did improve his threes from 28 to 40%, so that's obviously a big increase. But defensive numbers are generally poor with Spates. He was the 302nd ranked player in both 8 and 9 cat leagues. And that's sort of where he fits. If you have a Bogut injury and he's forced into a start and plays 25 minutes, you can expect 14 points and maybe 7 rebounds. But you don't expect too much more from Spates. He's an unrestricted free agent. Whether he comes back or not, again, it depends on what else they're doing in free agency. But I wouldn't be expecting anything major to come from Spates heading into next season. He was the one of the worst players in box score plus minus. The only player worse than him on this team was Kevon Looney. He was, I think, the second worst in offensive box score plus minus. An average win shares per 48. You know, PR was pretty impressive at 17, but you'll see with PR, it does favour the big blokes a lot. They're pretty piss poor true shooting of 51% as well. And he's a guy, again, that's, you know, he's not getting up there quite in age. He's still 28, so he's still got a couple more years, and he can be a serviceable player. If he goes somewhere else, maybe you'll definitely see him play more than 10 minutes a night. I think that's almost without a doubt. But the Warriors do value him, and they do value his contribution. So it's unlikely he really enters the stratosphere of anything outside of 30-team leagues, maybe a 24-team league. If that, hey, does anyone play in any leagues that are between 20 and 30 teams? You hear 20-team leagues, there's 30-team leagues. Does anyone play in a league in between that? Please, I would love to know. Let me know. I never have. Brandon Rush was an absolute disaster last season. Could not do a thing. Let me refresh my memory. Was last season the one he missed due to his ACL, or was the year before? I've completely blanked. I know that he was missing basically for a couple of seasons, but one of those was due to that was the year before where he had the ACL injury. He came back last year and played 8 minutes a game and averaged 0.9 points. He was one of the worst players in the NBA. This year, he took it up a couple of notches. 307th for the season, 333rd in 8 cat leagues. He started when Iguodala, when Barnes went down for a big chunk of the season, but never really sort of captured the imagination of fantasy players. Almost 4 points a game, 0.8 triples, 2.5 rebounds, 43, 63, 41%. Another Warrior just hitting threes at a ridiculous clip. Rush is an interesting player for next season. I thought he showed a really good sort of comeback ability, but he's 30 years of age. Does he get any better if he happens to go to another team, much like these other players? Yeah, at 14 minutes a game, is that a possibility for him to get more of next season? I would be doubtful on this team. On another team, yeah, sure, but then he might approach 20-team league value. Might. And that's it is a bit of a stretch. I'm just not all that keen on what he can do. He can hit threes, yes. His rebounding is pretty decent for a player of his stature, but overall, not much to really get excited about. Speaking of not much to get excited about, Ian Clark was a negative 19.3 in the on-off numbers. And I think a lot of it with this team is that the starters were just so good that the bench guys' on-off numbers just look atrocious. He was 380th in leagues, 9 cat, 379th in 8 cat leagues. He played 82 games and averaged just 9 minutes a game. But 3.7 points is not a bad return. A rebound, an assist, half a 3, 45 and 82. It's a really efficient with his shooting as well, Ian Clark. And I thought he showed bits and pieces. He did struggle at times defensively. He did struggle at times running the offense. But with Barbosa's advancing age, Clark's a restricted free agent. I wouldn't be adverse to bringing him back and putting him into more of a Barbosa role and playing a little bit more backup one behind Livingston as well. I think he's got a little bit of talent. Clark, I don't think he didn't disgrace himself this season. His advanced metrics aren't sensational, but I thought that he was okay. And you might find that Ian Clark can have himself a top 300 season at some point. And that's not really setting the bar very high. And he might have 2 or 3 years in the league left in him. And that's fine. He's had a pretty successful run at things. But I think there's just a little bit to like about what Clark can do if he was forced into a bigger role. Maybe some other team, some enterprising team, maybe the Bulls sign him to an offer sheet that the Warriors go, we're not paying $8 million for Ian Clark. And he comes over to the Bulls and is their backup point guard. And I wouldn't hate that. I think that in 20 minutes a night there, you in 20-team leagues, you'd want to pay attention to Clark because when Rose goes down, I think that Clark could have some value. And I'm
I'm not
anti Ian Clark. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. I am anti Anderson Varejao. Now, he had some really, really good seasons when he was in Cleveland. Yeah, so much so that he was a guy that was a top 50 guy for big chunks of his career, if he could stay healthy, which, of course, he was never able to do. And that was really, you'd own Andy, you'd draft him at the end of a draft, you'd play him, you'd be wrapped, and then you'd get injured. In the 2012-13 season, Andy Varejao was the 10th ranked player in NICAT leagues. He played only 25 games, but he averaged 14 points, 14.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.5 steals on 48 and 76 with 0.6 blocks. That's just 4 years ago. It's crazy. Now he is literally unplayable. Whether the Warriors bring him back, they inexplicably played him in the finals. They might bring him back. He's likely to go somewhere else, though, maybe with a one-year deal somewhere. Maybe he goes back to Cleveland on a one-year deal, but he is not going to be an impactful fantasy player in really any format that I could possibly think about. He was a real negative 2.5 overall box score plus minus, 3.3 on the offensive end, 0.8 defensively, so not bad numbers there, but overall just a real shit show watching Varejao play in a Warriors uniform this season. Jim McAdoo. James Michael McAdoo, as you may know him, he had an on-off of negative 30. That's horrendous. 418th in 9-cat leagues, 416th in 8-cat leagues, but I don't think that he is a write-off at all. He only played 6 minutes a night, 2.5 points, 1.3 rebounds, 0.3 steals, 0.2 blocks, 53 from the field. He shot 50% from 3 as well. I don't put much stock into that. But I think that as a small ball 5, as a 4, he offers a bit to teams. You know, it's probably best as a fourth big man overall. That's probably where he tops out at. But is he a better bet for the future than what Mo Spates is? Is he better than Varejao right now? Absolutely he is. Is he ever going to have a top 100 season? That's a real stretch. But you know, the opportunity arises for him, then it can happen. He's not one of those players that if it arises, he'll be that bad that they just have to keep cutting his minutes like Jakar Sampson. And even in 30 minutes a night, you're not worth rostering. If he was for some reason able to get 30 minutes a night, he could hold his head high, he could keep himself above water, and he could be a player that you'd want to stream in a standard league. His per 36 numbers this year, 15 and 8, with 1.6 steals, 1.2 blocks, and 53% shooting. That's really bloody good. Now, he played a total of less than 300 minutes, so it's hard to extrapolate it out too much, but I think that McAdoo is a guy that they'd be interested in bringing back for next season. At what cost remains to be seen, but his advanced metrics are pretty impressive. Win shares per 48, he was 7th, ahead of Livingston, ahead of Thompson, ahead of Iguodala, ahead of the Pencil, ahead of Spates, Barbosa. He was up there. His box score plus minus was in the middle of the pack, a negative 1.1, ahead of Rush, Barbosa, Varejao, Clark, Mo Spates. So he was, I thought, a relatively valuable player. He was a positive in VORP, and I don't think many people would have associated that with Jim this season. I think that he showed some signs, and he can stick in the NBA. It might not be with his team, but he will be on a roster somewhere next season, and I reckon we'll see him play more than those minutes that he played this season, where he played just 6 minutes, which was actually a decrease on what he did last year. I think that he can be a better player heading into his third season. Kevon Looney. Really, really worried about Kevon Looney. I thought it was an absolute steal when the Warriors got him at pick 30. They could let him develop. But now to have hip issues on both hips, it's a real concern. He was 414th in 9-cat and 426th in 8-cat leagues. He barely played because of the hip problems. He only played 5 games at 4 minutes a pop, so we didn't really get much of a chance to see what he can do. But what he can do, I'll tell you what he can do. He can rebound, he can score, he can hit threes, he can do it efficiently, and he can provide some modicum of defensive numbers, but we just haven't seen enough from Looney to really grasp what he is. And with his injury history now, the two hip problems is a massive concern. Whether I wouldn't be acquiring him, yes, he is really low, but I'm not sure that I have much confidence in him ever being a top 150 player at this point with those injuries. We saw nothing from him, and he's still 3 years away from being a contributor, but yeah, having two hip surgeries, opposite hips, with those labrum-type issues. I had a labrum issue in my hip. It is a massive, massive prick, and it hurts a lot, and it impacts everything that you do, including playing sport at an elite level, which I didn't do. But it just aches and throbs and kills you. It just saps your confidence because you go to move and you go, how old am I? Am I 20 or am I 50? You feel really, really weak. And two hips, both sides, it's not a good sign. The kid's 19 years of age, though, so he's got a bit of time. He's got time on his sleeve, up his sleeve. So if you're feeling particularly aggressive, you know, in a 400 deep league, sure, grab him. But for the worst player on your roster, and be prepared to sit 2 or 3 years for something to come of it. I'm not overly confident that much more is going to come of it. In the meantime, that is the Warriors roster done. I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to soothe this sexy voice, and then we're going to be back to talk about your fan essential questions.
This is the part with just the guitar. While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Segment of the 2015-16 NBA season. I hope you guys had a good NBA season. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And I think I might put some sort of feedback form up on the website for you to just give me your ideas, your thoughts. What did you hate? What did you like? What did you want more of? What do you want less of? I'm already mulling around a couple of ideas for next season. One of the early ideas that I'm doing at the moment is potentially doing a brand extension, a brand split, and splitting the podcast into two shorter podcasts, a season long and a DFS. They'll just broadcast back to back, the same content in them, but doing them as two separate shows. I'd encourage you to download both of them, and then you can just listen to the one that you want at the time that you want rather than having to fast forward back and forth. So that's an idea. I don't know if I'm going to go ahead with it, but that's something that I'm mulling around. I'm always open to your ideas. Let's get into these questions. And as per usual, the questions are brought to you by Fan Essentials. And if you don't know what Fan Essentials is, how would you like to get all of your favorite NBA teams merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? If you're a Grizzlies fan this month, you know, Fan Essentials, they've got a massive, let's say this Warriors flag that's above me, there's a massive Grizzlies flag that is part of the box that Fan Essentials sends you. FanEssentials.net is the website. You go there, you choose your favorite sports team. Every month you get your team's gear shipped right to your door. The guys at Fan Essentials, they find the sports gear. You don't have to do it. Each box comes packed full with amazing gear. It is a great gift idea. Father's Day was just on in the States. It's coming up in Australia in a couple of months. Your late Father's Day present. Why don't you go to Fan Essentials? Give your dad a box with his favorite team's gear in it. It starts at just $34.99. Go to fanessentials.net and use the promo code REDROCK. And at checkout, you get 30% off your first month. It's a big discount. Plus, of course, you submit your questions into this podcast and I choose one winner per week and you get one free month at Fan Essentials. Joseph Diffenbach won it last week, so he's going to be enjoying a month's worth of Fan Essentials. This is open to international listeners. Now, the only thing is if you are an international person and you win, you will have to pay shipping on it. You don't have to pay the cost of the month, but if you want, you have to pay the extra shipping cost. Now, it's probably not a huge amount, maybe $10, but you can get some $50 worth of stuff for $10. So it is open to international people as well, just they have to pay that international shipping. Let's get into the questions now. Brent Pearson says, would you still take Steph Curry at number one? Okay, Brent, no doubt in my mind, I'm taking him at number one. Now, this highlights a really important point. Recency bias. I talk about the psychology of fantasy basketball a lot. You probably say, Josh, get your hand off it. You're not a psychologist, but I'm an amateur psychologist. I'm a fantasy psychologist. Is that a job? I'm going to make it a job, fantasy psychologist. You saw Steph struggle in the finals, Brent. I'm not saying that you wouldn't take him at one, but you saw him struggle in the finals. That made you ask the question. cool. It was four games. Steph was the number one player by that far last season. He was number one the year. I had him at number one the year before. Had him at number one last season. I'll be going in the trifecta of Steph Curry at number one. But if people think, like, along the lines of Brent's question, and you're in a dynasty league with Steph Curry, is this the best time to acquire him? There's never been a better time to acquire Steph Curry in a dynasty league, because that thought process is going around. And this is, again, Brent, I'm not picking on you. I'm not saying this is you, but the fact that you brought the question up means that the thought process is out there. Explore it. The next question is, how high would you draft Draymond Green and Klay Thompson in a standard 9-cat roto? First of all, don't play 9-cat roto. Second of all, Draymond is an end of the first round, start of the second round guy. Klay, to me, is a back end of the second, maybe to mid third. That's the spots that I'd be looking at them. Now, that question had a couple of people reply to it. Lam Huynh says the same question in head-to-head dynasty format, please. Steph is he still number one? Yeah, probably, because you don't want to really look at dynasty and go, I want to project for 5 years out. Now, Towns is obviously right up there, and if you don't want to win straight away, Towns is probably the number one player you pick there. But yes, I would still pick Steph at number one in head-to-head dynasty. And then Devin Aronson, now he doesn't ask a question, but he just says, I'm not trying to steal Josh's thunder at all, but this is my take. So, I'm interested for your take, Devin. I'm going to share it with everyone. He says, I think Curry should still be taken number one overall in any format. I agree. His shooting guard eligibility adds to his already insane value. Agree. He says, I think Green and Thompson are both top 15 players in any setting. Don't agree. But anyway, they are able to excel even with Steph Curry on the court. I am paying top dollar for the Warriors next year. I take both of them after the other superstars are gone. Well, I disagree with you there, Devin, but the stuff on Steph is right. But yes, Draymond's a top 15. Klay is not, in my opinion. Rick Roy doesn't have a question, just a comment. He says, Draymond and Steph showed a lot of class by staying on the floor and congratulating the Cavs. Yeah, they did. If it was me in that situation, I'd absolutely be on there congratulating them. I think that it's the right thing to do. I can understand people not doing it, but I would absolutely be out there. I think it's definitely you see it in hockey a lot, but in Australia, it almost feels it'd be shamed down here. Much like that hockey situation, like, You go out there, you're playing footy against someone, you kick the shit out of each other, you bump into them, you bang into them, the siren rings, yeah, you give them a hug, you give them a pat on the ass, you shake their hand, all good, and you know, you go your separate ways. So it's a different mentality, it's a different thought process as over in the States, I understand that, but if people here didn't do that, then they would be looked down upon by their team and by their opponents as well. Yeah, but good, glad that Steph and Draymond did that. Joseph, he's back again. Joseph Diffenbach. Does multiple long postseason runs start to affect the regular season value of the Warriors players? Now, that is a superb question, Joseph. And if the Warriors didn't go out in such fashion as they did this year, I would say, yes, it could have a significant impact. And it still may have, but I think they're going to be that red hot to get back and do it again. But they also might go, okay, let's get ourselves through the season and ease off a bit so he can go completely balls to the wall in the playoffs. Now, is it enough to take Steph away from number one? No, but it's enough to make the gap narrower. And again, it's enough for me to not take Klay in the second round probably, and for me to be a little bit cautious on Draymond. But it is a possibility, Joseph. Definitely, it's a good question. Lam Huynh with another question. He says, which five players do you think will make up the primary bench of the Warriors? It's an interesting question. It's really hard to judge at this point. Obviously, Iguodala will be one of those guys, and Livingston will be one of those guys. But, you know, Rush, Barbosa, Spates, whether they come back or not, I'm not sure. I think McAdoo has a real chance to get into that mix as well. Thoughts on Looney's dynasty value? Not keen. Really concerned about his hips. How much better does Draymond get, especially after playing on the Olympic teams, and there's been proven effects of this on the characteristics such as leadership? Well, does Draymond really need improved leadership? We know that he is basically the spirit animal of this team. How much better does he get? Yeah, he could score more. He could be an extra scorer on this team. But with Klay and Steph both averaging 22+, it's not really his role. Can you really ever see him averaging more than 7 assists a game? I could see him being a 2-block, 10-rebound guy potentially. But would I pick him in the first round, Draymond? I definitely wouldn't take him in the top 10, but I could make an argument at pick 12. But yes, the Olympic thing is a factor. Brent Pearson doubles up with another question. Will this team make a big free agent acquisition? They will try to, and whether they should or not with Kevin Durant remains to be seen. But with the way that the playoffs didn't work out in their favor, and yeah, there was a lot of talk, don't get Durant, it's going to muck up your flow. Maybe it's hard to say that Kevin Durant wouldn't be a positive for a team. Do they make one? I don't think they do. I'm not sure that they're going to acquire, you know, Nowitzki or Durant or any big names really this season. Jeff Richard Padre says, will Draymond surpass Curry as the Warriors MVP? No. But he's an MVP in a different sort of sense. He's just different. They're just different players. But no, Steph is still the best player on this team. And Draymond is comfortably the second best player. But yeah, he did look like it in the finals. Absolutely. Oh, I agree with you there, Jeff. But he is not going to be this team's MVP next season. In 2 years' time, it might be a different story. But I don't see that being the case next season. We're done. That is the podcast over. That is the show over. That brings a close to the 2015-16 NBA season. Remember, we're 2 days away from the 2016-17 season starting up with the NBA draft. So I'll be breaking down that entire draft after the draft happens. I'm going to do a two-round mock draft over on Basketball Monster, so make sure you're checking out that. And then there's going to be a stack of content coming out. Now, in July, the podcast will be a little bit light on because I'll be traveling. I'll be over in the States. So you won't be getting, you know, 3-4 episodes a week. You might get one. You might get none, depending on how I go with traveling with my equipment and getting it set up. But there will definitely be a lot of Twitter action from me, a lot of action on the Facebook pages as well. And then when I come back, it'll be smashing out the content. There'll be free agencies. I'll be leaving after the majority of free agency is done. I think I'm leaving at the after the first week of July, so majority of free agent decisions would have been made. And then I'll be back. I might talk about Summer League when I'm over there, which I'll endeavor to do, but depends on and transitioning this equipment over there as well. So we'll see. You might get a bare bones podcast, acoustic set style. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Don't forget Basketball Monster. We're going to have a massive season on Basketball Monster next season. I am going full-time with Basketball Monster. I have given my other job the flick. So I will no longer be working two jobs. I'm no longer going to be a pharmacist. I am doing fantasy sports full-time now. So you have my assurances that the content for next season will be turned up at least 17 notches. The predictions, the prognostications, everything, the content, the shows, the written stuff, the videos, everything will be turned up a million notches next season. Hopefully I get a few more jerseys to hang behind me as well. FanEssentials.net, promo code REDROCK, Fantrax, promo code REDROCK. You know, Fantrax is going to be the absolute best place, and you're going to be starting up your football league soon. Do it on Fantrax, and I can't wait for Jordan and Russell to get their show started. They're going to have a listener league on there on Fantrax as well. Don't know what sort of format they're going to have it, but they are going to have something. So check out those guys. Working on a REDROCK fantasy baseball podcast as well. Got a couple of guys we're just working with at the moment to do some DFS and season-long content, and that will start coming out soon. That'll obviously be ramped up more heading into next season, but we will be doing that. And then maybe, who knows how far I extend the REDROCK podcast network. We might start doing some soccer shows, some college football. We might do hockey. We might do Australian football. There's a lot of different options that we can do. I know Matt Smith wants to have a REDROCK Formula One podcast. Maybe he can do that for me. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening with the REDROCK podcast network as well. We're done for the last time for this season. Again, the next season starts in 2 days, so don't go anywhere. There's going to be lots happening, but this is the end of the 2015 NBA season. Thank you so much for listening today and every day. See ya. Oh yeah, big boy. You like that, yeah? Oh yeah. Sexy voice time.